so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 8th, 2016, and it's our annual New Year's show. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
And guest co-host, Carolyn Carnery.
Hi.
Jackie is away today. Welcome, everyone, and Happy New Year. New Year. It's a new year, and because it's Veganuary, many of you might be thinking to take the plunge and go vegan for 2016. We certainly hope you do. And for our first segment today, we hope to guide you well in that direction as we'll be presenting our own tips and advice for going vegan in 2016. And for our feature interview, I always like to start off the year with a theme of activism. Again, with setting resolutions of how to help the animals, it can be inspirational to hear how a seasoned activist has done it. And so today, we'll have longtime animal activist Jasmine Singer on the show in an activist profile. We'll be talking to her about how she got her start in the world of animal activism and what fuels her passion to keep fighting for the animals. She'll also be giving some great advice on how one can find their niche to act for the animals in 2016, and she'll also speak on some topics as written about in her brand new upcoming book entitled Always Too Much and Never Enough. That interview is coming up in about 22 minutes, so please do stay tuned.
So earlier we were talking a little bit about New Year's resolutions, things that we would like to accomplish this year in our animal advocacy and our veganism. And Caroline, you had some great thoughts on this. I was wondering if you could share those with us.
I think this is probably going to sound like the laziest resolution that ever was, but I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And the reason I say that is because I've had a little bit of fatigue around my activism, which is heavily based on letter writing, phone calls, and petition signing from my home, from my laptop, in my yoga pants with my coffee in hand.
And armchair activism,
yeah,
as we like to call it.
Clicktivism, yeah, right? Clicking away. And, you know, at times I just feel like, oh, I'm not doing very much, or I feel a little bit overwhelmed because there's no, you know, there's so many petitions. When I open up my inbox in the morning, you would think that change.org is my best friend, because there it is with about 30 new petitions for me to sign. And sometimes I think, oh, I'm just going to scroll by today. And, but then I don't. I go back and I sign those petitions and I write those letters and I make those phone calls. And this week, you know, I opened up, a notice saying that Capital Iron in Victoria, BC, which is a large sporting goods store and household store, which sells a lot of Canada Goose jackets, has actually decided, as a result of a petition that I signed, along with a lot of other people, decided to stop selling Canada Goose jackets. And of course, Canada Goose are notorious not only for their down filling, but because they use coyote for trim, and those coyotes are caught largely in leg hole traps, so they're quite a cruel product. And so they have stopped selling, and that's all because a bunch of people sat in their yoga pants with their coffee and clicked, including me.
So petitions work.
They often work.
Because, and I think often people think that they don't work.
Right.
So I think for people who want to get into armchair activism, if you don't think you can do anything, if you have access to a computer, that's something that you can do that can make a difference.
Right.
You made a difference.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I think a diversity of tactics is important. And, you know, every little bit counts. You know, anything, you know, obviously we all have different abilities, different things that we're able to do realistically, you know, and yeah, if that's something that you can do, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that this year, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. This might sound sort of general, but I think that if I have a New Year's resolution for advocacy, it's just to be more fearless I'm thinking about how activism, you know, demonstrating, particularly just being out on the street, being out there advocating for animals, it takes a lot of bravery. It can be very scary sometimes, depending on what exactly you're doing. And yeah, this year I feel like I would like to challenge myself to just do some things that really scare me.
Out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Would you say that actions that you've done, perhaps with Direct Action Everywhere, have been out of your comfort zone?
Occasionally, yeah. Yeah, there have been some scary things. Yeah, we did an action just recently where we blocked off an intersection, a major intersection, just sort of
That was at Canby and Broadway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, went out in the middle of the street and had this cacophony of cars honking at us and, you know, people sort of driving erratically around us because they were trying to get past and that sort of thing. And it was frightening, exhilarating at the same time. But, things like that. There's all sorts of different things that can be done, even when it comes to open rescue or, you know, things that where you're dealing more directly with animals and there's risk involved. But, I feel like I would like to challenge myself this year to get out of my comfort zone even a little bit more.
Yeah, for my New Year's resolution, I've been thinking of this because it's a new year and you want to resolve to do something new usually. And I'm thinking, well, what do I really want to do? And for me, I've been really stepping it up lately with all the work that I've been doing on the show. I don't know if people are aware of this, but I'm here all the time, except for the last 2 weeks where we had no shows because I wasn't here. Right. So we didn't have any shows. So it's basically up to me to keep this show going right now. And my heart and soul is completely in it. And I just want to renew that commitment to the show, Animal Voices. I think it's so important. You'll hear in our interview today with Jasmine Singer, she's the host of the Our Hen House podcast. So she and I kind of do the same thing, right? And we speak about in that interview how finding your niche in activism is really important. And if you think that you're good at something, or if you are good at something, I think I'm good at doing this.
You are.
I'm pretty much a master of everything here. Here I am doing the controls, producing the show and conducting interviews and, you know, hosting in that. So it's where my heart lies, and I want to keep doing that for the animals. And I totally don't mind. This is all volunteer. I totally don't mind. And I love doing this work and putting so much time and effort into it. And having said that too, I just want to put a reminder out there for people. We do need people to keep the show going. If you want to be on the radio, if you want to just help out with some tech stuff, if you want to come and host, if you want to produce shows, please contact me. Send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and I'm sure we can totally find a way to get you involved. So yeah, New Year's resolutions for 2016. More to come on that later.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Check out the F word at feminisms.org.
We are listening to the Animal Voices show on Co-op Radio. It's 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. It is the new year, and we hope that you may be ready to make a step forward for the animals, the environment, and your health in 2016, and go vegan if you haven't already. We have some tips and advice from our own experiences that we would like to share with you to help pave the way for a positive and sustainable journey into veganism. And for our first tip we have from Caroline is to get educated about the issues.
That's right, Allison. I think that for me, there's a crash course of three movies that a person should watch before they become vegan or in the process of becoming vegan. And the first of those movies is Forks Over Knives, and that really deals with the health angle of veganism and plant-based eating. Cowspiracy is the second one, and it deals with the environmental piece. And both of those films are available on Netflix. And Earthlings is the third one, and that covers the ethical angle in terms of our relationship with animals and how we use and abuse them for fashion, food, and entertainment. So it's good to have those three angles covered. And also films like Veducated, Ghosts in the Machine, and there are many, many more available on Netflix and out there as well. I also think that in terms of getting educated, at least it's my experience, is that people start asking you questions, and not always in the nicest of terms either. And I think that in the first month that most people go vegan, they will be asked at least 100 times, but where do you get your protein? And actually, this is a question that never really stops. I've been a vegan for almost 40 years now, and I get that question, you know, on a weekly basis. So it's a really good thing to actually know where you get your protein, because a lot of people simply don't know that you can get all the protein you need from plants.
That's actually the last time I was asked that. I just simply said from plants.
Right.
And then the person said, well, which plants? I was like, oh, I really need to think about you that. I want really proteins and everything.
Yeah. Right.
And there's a website called Vegan Sidekick, and you can find them at vegansidekick.com. And they have every answer to almost every question that you will be asked.
In the form of hilarious comics, right? Hilarious.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the key point. It's in the form of hilarious comics.
Yeah. So I actually think on that website that they have a lot of question and answers as
they
well.
They do actually, yeah, an FAQ section, yeah.
Yeah, FAQ section. So when somebody comes up and says, but we have to eat meat because we wouldn't have evolved if we didn't have meat in our diet.
Right.
Well, Vegan Sidekicks to the rescue, and it has the answer for that and many, many other points. But it does seem that a lot of people become instant nutritionalists the moment you become a vegan, even if their diet is based on French fries.
Yeah, exactly. I agree that being educated on the issues, at least, you know, on a basic level, is vitally important. Yeah, especially animal rights issues, we want to know, you know, or have a pretty secure knowledge of why exactly we're making this step and living this lifestyle. And I wanted to mention that there is a local organization, Liberation BC, and they have an excellent website that gives a lot of information about various animal rights issues. You can go to liberationbc.org/issues. There are articles about everything from, you know, meat, dairy, eggs, fur, wool, all these different animal products and the issues surrounding their production. And they cite long lists of sources, including industry sources. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, just along the same lines, getting educated about nutrition. I think a lot of people think that being vegan is very complicated, or maintaining good health as a vegan is hard, or you have to really, like, you know, practically have a degree in nutrition to do it. You really don't. You just kind of need to know some basic things. But there's a lot of information out there. Some of it is good, some of it is really not good. So it's important to kind of have an idea of which sources are reliable and evidence-based and, you know, which are good. And two that I would recommend most highly are veganhealth.org and theveganrd.com. They're both sites that are maintained by vegan registered dietitians and very comprehensive, very accessible. Theveganrd.com in particular is very accessible. Her articles are short, but very informative. So yeah, it's good to just go to sites like that, do a little bit of reading. The Vegan RD actually has these awesome nutrition primers on kind of basic issues like we were talking about protein, B12, and that sort of thing.
Another great website to answer all your questions, because there's a video for everything on the site, is nutritionfacts.org.
Right.
And that's run by Dr. Michael Greger, who I hope to have on the show in a couple weeks. For number three, we have Get Support.
I think this is one of the most critical points, because if you don't know something, you need to know where you can get that support. And the new vegan support group on Facebook and the Vancouver Vegans, also on Facebook, will help you, you know, with any question you have, whether it be about shopping lists, how to deal with omnivore families at holiday time, how to manage physical changes that you're going through in the first weeks or month of becoming a vegan. And there are cravings, and some people experience a feeling awful in the first few weeks of becoming a vegan because they're detoxing. And so people need to know, is this normal? Well, it is normal. A lot of people experience a lot of gas in the first few weeks of changing their diet completely. And so is that normal? Yes, it is. And so on these Facebook pages and in these types of groups, there are a lot of new vegans, so you can ask any question you want without feeling silly. And there's an old guard of vegans there that can help you with any questions that you have, whether it be on nutritional yeast and B12 or social bullies and how to deal with, you know, the change in your social life that's happening as well. So it's good to have that virtual support, and also the to seek out meetups locally, and to make vegan friends locally so that you can go out and experience new restaurants. And
which we did last night,
yeah,
right?
Which we did last night, Caroline, which was so much
did
fun.
That. We had 70 people come out to an Ethiopian restaurant here, and it was full. And Caroline asked me, do you know everyone here? And I said, no, I don't. But I do know quite a few. But it's actually great that I don't know everyone, because it means that people are coming to meet each
That's
other
right.
and to congregate and to make new friends. I also quickly wanted to point out the resource of veganuary.com. We've had them on the show last month. This is an excellent resource. It's an online, it's completely free, and there's a huge online forum there for support. If you want to go vegan in January, which is now, or at any time, go to veganuary.com. So the next quick tip that I wanted to point out is to tour the grocery store with new eyes and make a grocery shopping fun. So I know before I became vegan, I used to typically just shop at the standard supermarkets such as Safeway, very boring. Branch out to different kinds of stores that there are out there, such as natural food stores in your area and co-ops, all vegan stores if you happen to live somewhere that has one. Plus, I always find that Costco is always a fun trip because there's so many interesting vegan products there, and it's like a game to walk up and down the aisles and to like, especially at Costco, to see what they, because I get there about once every 5 or 6 weeks, and there's always like new stuff there, and just mayo is like the big, like it's like the big popular thing right now. Everyone's running there to get it, and so just familiarize yourself with ingredients. And even if you don't cook that much, go to farmers markets and, you know, fruits and vegetables, just discovering like new different types of foods. Because when you don't include the meat, you have so many more options. So for our number five, we have Get Into the Kitchen.
Yeah, I enjoy cooking personally. I know a lot of people, you know, a lot of people I know are not necessarily into cooking. But if you do enjoy cooking at all, or you're interested in learning how to cook, being vegan is an awesome challenge. I find I get really excited about new recipes, you know, interesting ethnic dishes to try. And even just, you know, especially when you're a new vegan, but even for someone like me, I've been vegan for 5 years, and I get excited about veganizing dishes that I loved when I was a child, you know, that had animal products in them. But you can do that. Any dish that you love, no matter what it has in it, pretty much, you can make a vegan version that is delicious and satisfying. And yeah, you just if you want to search for any particular dish, you just go on Google and vegan whatever, and you can find a wonderful recipe.
I was going to say, I posted a link this week on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, of amazing vegan desserts to make from onegreenplanet.org. And it has over 15,000 likes. Can
wow.
you believe that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So that's actually all the time we have for our tips for today. I just wanted to end with this quote by Gary Francione. He's an animal rights philosopher. Veganism is not about giving anything up or losing anything. It is about gaining the peace within yourself that comes from embracing nonviolence and refusing to participate in the exploitation of the vulnerable. So whereas all these tips might seem, you know, kind of like fun to do, and it is fun, just remember why you're doing it, and it's for a much greater cause than just food, which we need to nourish ourselves, but there's such a deeper reason within to go vegan. So that's all we have for today for this, and we have some news now. Elise and Caroline.
The Saskatchewan Inn reported this week that it had changed its mind about hosting a two-day trade show aimed at luring Saskatchewan hunters to Africa to hunt. So the reason for the cancellation, and this goes back to the top of the show talking about petitions, a petition was signed by over 3,500 people showing outrage about the show coming. And now, having said that, it appears that the show has rerouted itself to the Travel Lodge Hotel, Saskatoon, and there is a petition available at change.org in order to, let that hotel know how you feel about them taking on that show.
We can post that on our Facebook page.
That's great.
Since we know that petitions do work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The musician Moby has a new vegan restaurant in Los Angeles' Silver Lake neighborhood called Little Pine, and he plans to give all of its profits to various animal charities. Reps for Little Pine say it was all Moby's idea. He says, quote, "Opening Little Pine was never meant to be a conventional entrepreneurial endeavor. I wanted to represent veganism in a really positive light and also to support the animal welfare organizations who do such remarkable work." Some of the organizations that will benefit from the profits from this restaurant include the Humane Society, Farm Sanctuary, Sea Shepherd, PETA, Animal Legal Defense Fund, and more.
I have to say that Moby is really an ally within our movement.
He's pretty awesome.
Sometimes we just don't really realize, you know, we don't really know if a celebrity really has their heart into it or not, because a lot of celebrities just go vegan for fun or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Moby has been a long-time ethical vegan, and mm-hmm. someone asked me to like his Facebook page this week, and I'm like, okay, is it just like music stuff? Where I looked on there, and it's like all animal rights posts.
Yeah.
Yay, Moby.
he's a great activist.
And in other news, Anita Crank, who is the woman charged with criminal mischief for giving water to thirsty pigs in Toronto, made a fourth court appearance at the Burlington Courthouse December the 15th, where the Crown announced that it intends to proceed by summary conviction on the charge of criminal mischief over $5,000, which carries a maximum sentence of 6 months in jail or a $5,000 fine or both.
Wow.
And in our News Light segment, GQ okay. magazine names a meatless burger from Superior Burgers, a restaurant in New York, the Burger of the Year for 2015.
It's pretty amazing.
Yay. How about that? Well, thank you for the news.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Our hen house is a squawking house. Our hen house is their hen house. Our hen house. Ooh, it's a funky fr-
For our feature interview, we have Jasmine Singer on the show, a longtime activist for the animals. She is the executive director of Our Hen House, which is a media hub to change the world for animals. And she produces a popular weekly podcast and an online magazine, along with her wife, animal rights lawyer Marianne Sullivan. Jasmine has been published in dozens of print and online publications, has appeared on the Dr. Oz Show and HuffPo Live, and can be seen in the award-winning documentaries Veducated and The Ghosts in Our Machine. As an added accomplishment, she has her first book coming out in February, which is a memoir of her life entitled Always Too Much and Never Enough. And this week, she was just named one of the 40 people under 40 to teach us about each other by The Advocate magazine. Today we present to you an activist profile of Jasmine Singer. Hello, Jasmine, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. It's so exciting to be here.
So I've just finished reading your book last week, Always Too Much and Never Enough. It is a very transparent and heartfelt account of your lifelong struggles with your weight, food, and body image, and also goes much into how you got into the world of animal activism and veganism. I wonder if you could first start out by telling your story about what the impetus was for you one day when you were eating a cheesesteak that made you suddenly see the idea of eating meat differently.
Thanks for reading my book. You read an advanced copy, and so yeah. It sort of blows my mind that people are going to read it. So I was very excited that you were reading it. And yeah, I was living in Philadelphia, the land of the cheesesteaks. I went to college there in 97 for theater, and I was 18, 19 years old when I lived there before moving to New York City, where I've lived since then. And it was the first time that food was something I was in control of getting, of providing, of buying, of cooking. It happens to a lot of kids around that age, that it's really the first time that they're in charge of what they eat. So I was eating a cheesesteak, as you know, and desperately seeking an identity, as many 19-year-olds are doing. And I looked at my cheesesteak, and I had just been on the phone with my mom and was talking about my cat, Rocky. And suddenly all of these things came together. I'd never before considered that meat used to be an individual or many individuals. And I had this new friend at college, Emily, and she was a vegetarian, and she was the first vegetarian I had ever met. And she wasn't proselytizing about it at all. She just was a vegetarian. And just by Emily being in my life and me eating that cheesesteak at that moment, I started to say, this is actually maybe kind of wrong. So I think that was the first moment for me. And I became a vegetarian at that time. And I was kind of ironic about it. Like, I always used to say I'm a vegetarian, but not the mean kind. And little did I know what I would become. But I think there was a fake it till you make it attitude of mine at the time. I think that might have been a form of self-protection. If I call myself a vegetarian and I really stand by that, then what if I fail? So I used to kind of make fun of myself about it. But I see now in retrospect that I was actually paying attention for the first time in my life to my truest self that didn't want to cause harm to others and that wanted not only an identity for the outside to introduce myself as a vegetarian and think I was cool, because that's what I thought. I still think I'm cool, but not nearly as cool as I thought then. But something that actually was true for my value system that I was only starting to form.
Well, you mentioned this in the book several times, and I've heard you say it on the podcast before quite a few times, that veganism is a moral imperative. So why is it a moral imperative to you?
Well, that at the time that I was in Philadelphia, I just became a vegetarian, but I became a vegan when I was 24. And I think that by the time I did, I realized that going vegan was a way for me to not only live in line with my values, but why is it a moral imperative? It's because we have found out that we don't have to eat meat, dairy, or eggs. When you're a kid, you think you have to, or maybe if you're an uneducated adult, you think you have to. But once you find out you don't have to, it changes everything. And it becomes a choice. You know, it was a choice for me as a kid, but I didn't know. I didn't have the resources available to me. I didn't know anyone who didn't eat meat or animals. But once I learned, once I saw a documentary about factory farming, once I had a vegan friend who was showing me the ropes, I also found out about the level of suffering. And to cause suffering when you don't have to, in my opinion and in my experience, any moral system in the universe would say that that is immoral. So for me, going vegan was a moral imperative.
And so if veganism is a moral imperative, then does activism for the animals go in hand with that? And perhaps you can share from your own experiences how becoming vegan fueled your fire to also become active for the animals. You say you eat, sleep, and breathe animal rights. So how did that come to be?
I say in the book that when I went vegan, I realized that food is the most personal political issue. And I talk a lot about something that you talk about and a lot of your guests talk about and my guests on our handouts, which is the ability to vote with our fork and our dollar. And I think that when you're not vegan, you're actually actively participating in a system of cruelty. I think that it's much different when you become vegan because you're no longer participating in it. And of course, there's all different types of cruelty that we're participating in without realizing it. And so it's a constant evolution to realize in what way we're still oppressing others and how we can expand our, you know, circle of compassion and how we can become better versions of ourselves and truer to our personal ethics. But I don't think that being an activist is necessarily a moral imperative, but I think being vegan is, because it's not actively participating. By not being an activist, you could still also be, you know, living a life around nonviolence. You know what I mean?
So speaking of becoming an activist for the animals, how does a person find their niche in becoming an animal activist? And this is our New Year's show where we want to empower people to become active for the animals. So what advice would you have to a new person in the movement?
I'm glad you asked that. I started our hen house. We're in our seventh year now, and I started it because I had been working as a campaigns manager for a national farmed animal protection organization, which I loved doing. But I started to get the feeling that people were becoming reliant on top-down organizational campaigns to dictate the way we become active. So becoming active meant waiting for a petition to land in our inbox, and then we sign it and send it off. Or it meant sponsoring a turkey on Thanksgiving, which is great. And I do those things too. But if we're going to create a massive shift in society, we need to change the way the vast majority of consumers consume. And in order to do that, we can actually get involved in our own lives right now. It doesn't require a bullhorn. It doesn't require a protest if that's not your bag. You know, it can literally be as easy as asking yourself what you're good at, what your social circles are, and what excites you, and starting there. It can be something that's extremely fulfilling. So you, for example, are a good presenter and you host this show. That is a form of activism. I know teachers who are incorporating humane ed materials into their classroom. That is a form of activism. If you work in an office, it can be as simple as baking vegan cupcakes and providing the recipes along with a Why Vegan brochure. That is activism. So those are all examples of using your talent and skills and interests in a way to change the world for animals. But any time we could step it up, we can, we should. So can we think about what the next level would be for that? For the example of the office outreach that I just mentioned with the cupcakes, can we then, you know, make a little video about it, or maybe have a vegan challenge in our office? Or it's January right now, and of course Veganuary is going on. Is that a campaign that we can introduce to different non-vegan circles in our lives? So anything we can do to step up what we're already doing is perfect, but it should be fun and it should be easy. And you should do one thing a day, even if it's forwarding an email. It's like 11:30 and you're going to bed and, oh gosh, I didn't do anything today to change the world for animals. Just get up and jump on your computer. Well, don't actually jump on your computer. I don't recommend that. It would break, but jump onto your email and see what you could do in 5 minutes, 5 minute activism.
So I want to hear about when you first delved into the world of animal rights activism. You said your goal was to find a job in animal rights, which I wouldn't say is an arena that is lucrative for job opportunities. But can you tell us about how this job search went and then how our hen house got started?
No, I totally became an activist for the money.
Rich that way.
Yeah, that's why I'm in it. I don't know about you. But I was working as an AIDS awareness educator at the time. And so it was an interesting shift for me. I was also trying to be an actor in New York City, which of course also is not a very lucrative field. And I was doing a lot of odd jobs here and there. And when I went vegan, I had a friend who was connected down at PETA in Norfolk. And I went down to PETA to volunteer for a week. And it just like immediately with, I was vegan for like a few weeks, I think. And I went down to PETA, and that will seal the deal for anybody, not only about going vegan, but about dedicating your life to changing the world for animals. And so I came back, I worked part-time for a animal rights group, and I started writing for Veg News. That was over 10 years ago. I still write for Veg News. And eventually I volunteered to coordinate the New York City Walk for Farm Animals for Farm Sanctuary. And I said to them, I'm doing this because I love your organization and this cause, but I also want a job with you. So I was very forward about it. And they hired me, and that job became the campaigns manager. And I did a lot of consulting on the side for other animal rights groups. And then I started our hen house in 2010 because of what I just mentioned, that I knew what I was good at. And that was presenting and writing and organizing and helping people to become emboldened to change the world for animals. And I didn't see that there was a media hub at that point that spoke to all of these various ways. So my partner and I, Marianne Sullivan, we started our hen house, and it has just grown from there. People were thirsty for it. They were thirsty for a place where they could listen to stories of thousands and thousands of activists and come up with replicable ways to get involved with changing the world.
Well, you spoke a little bit about your activism in AIDS awareness, and you've also been active in the LGBT awareness movement as well. So can you speak about intersectionality between social justice movements and the place of the animal rights movement in this?
Oh, yeah, of course. And if you're interested in this topic, I very strongly recommend that you watch the video we made just a few months ago called Coming Out for Animals. And if you just Google Coming Out for Animals, it'll be the first thing that comes up. But it's a little short video we made this past year that spoke to those places where different social justice movements overlap and intersect. And as I did mention, I came into the animal rights movement by way of the AIDS awareness movement. And one of the first articles I wrote for animal rights was for the now defunct magazine Satya, which is an amazing magazine, and all of the articles are still available online on Satya. And I wrote an article about coming out for animal rights, and it was something I had been thinking about a little bit, but I was really brand new, and it gave me the opportunity to talk to animal rights activists who had been involved in various other types of social justice issues for so many years. And so for me personally, it was a natural progression from the AIDS awareness activism I was doing, where I was spending my days speaking up for this very othered group of people. And I remember at the time I was a vegetarian, not yet vegan, and all I ate was like dairy and eggs when I was a vegetarian. And so I was eating cottage cheese, which is really disgusting. Just aside from animal exploitation, it's like, ew. But anyway, I was eating cottage cheese, and I was literally thinking about how I cared so much about women and the women's rights movement and all of the various aspects of history that helped to forward the cause of women and equality. And I realized that I was contributing to the exploitation of female reproductive systems by consuming dairy. And I thought about my own experience as being date raped, which is something that I get into in my book, and about how I felt like I was just being used for my, you know, it was an act of violence and it was taking advantage of my body. And I remember I was standing on like 116th Street and Broadway, right by St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital. And I was eating this cottage cheese, and it all came flooding back to me, like the date rape thing and the fact that I was now actively participating in othering other female bodies. So it just, again, similar to the cheesesteak experience, suddenly I couldn't do it anymore. And there were other things that fell into place, which is why I ultimately went vegan. But to me, if you care about a world that is based around equality and kindness and justice, you'll get active for all different oppressed groups and other groups. And that includes, of course, animals. So that was how it was for me with the AIDS awareness movement, with the LGBT movement, which is something I still am I'm very passionate about, of course. It's exciting to see the progress that's being made in the LGBT world. And I feel like the animal rights movement is moving at a really speedy pace. So it's all about how we can be true to ourselves. And that's something that my book, Always Too Much and Never Enough, is about. It was my roundabout journey to becoming truthful and authentic to myself. And for me, and hopefully for you and the people listening to this, that is all about uncovering the many ways we could not contribute to cruelty and instead fight against it.
Absolutely. It was a really introspective book, I think. It must have just had you just really think so much back to your life experiences and really just analyze and bring forth all the conclusions that you come to when you're telling your story. And it's just an amazing way to do that by writing a book. So one of these issues that I'd like you to talk about as someone who eats, sleeps, and breathes animal rights is self-care. And I want to know why you think this is important in the life of an activism, especially an animal activist, I would say, where it's really easy to be brought down in despair to the point of burnout. So why is self-care important to you?
I'm so glad that you're bringing this topic up on your show, because I've been in the animal rights movement and in the activism movement for long enough to see a lot of people leave. And my partner, Marianne, has been in the movement for decades. And also we sometimes sit there and we talk of, remember that person? And it's sad. And you wonder why, like what happened and how can we avoid that happening in the future? And to be honest, and this is a total shameless plug, but I think our hen house is helpful for that. And I think that our hen house provides community to a lot of people who wouldn't otherwise have it. So hopefully that's a little way that our hen house helps out. But self-care is vital. It's vitally important for anyone, activist, vegan or not, who wants to be the best versions of themselves that we can. This is your New Year's show, so it's the perfect time to talk about it. We need to create safe spaces for ourselves and for our peers. And, you know, that's something that I know you've talked about and other people have talked about specifically regarding the holidays, which have just passed. Like, what do you do if you have to go to these really daunting family get-togethers that have animal products at them? Well, one thing that you could do is to bookend your trip with a safe space, with like a vegan potluck or a best friend or a partner or a comrade or a meetup or, you know, something like that. But that advice can extend far beyond just the holidays. To find a safe space, to have a short list on your phone of people who get it and get you and appreciate your veganism as the very best part of you, because for a lot of us it is. But beyond that, we have to do very simple things that most of our mothers told us to do when we were kids. We have to drink water. We have to exercise and get outside every day, which is something I have to remind myself of because it's 1:50 right now and I haven't been outside today yet. But, you know, that's something I have to do. And I know I do. Even if I'm too busy, it's a way of paying yourself first. Physical exercise, you know, eating right. And that is, of course, a big part of my book, too. As vegans, we have the luxury of having lots and lots of outstanding foods at our disposal. But I think eating a healthy diet comprised of vegetables and fruits and whole grains and sustaining foods is very, very important to our longevity. And, you know, just constantly saying, well, am I doing something for fun? I have a hard time with that. You know, I have a hard time having fun. We should totally call each other on that.
I was going to say you do make time to see Broadway shows. Can you talk about on the show quite a lot?
I do. So, though, I mean, you know what? It's good you mentioned that because we'll get tickets like months in advance. So we have a ticket to something in January. We're seeing Hamilton. Be very jealous. We have tickets to something in February, March, April. Like, well, because otherwise we won't do it. And it's the same thing with my tap dancing. Mm-hmm. It's like it has nothing to do with animal rights, but I tap dance at least once a week. I try to go.
I think it's important to do something that's not animal rights or whatever active cause that you just delve into, right? Like, it's something. I think it's great. I'm a musician myself, and at least once a week I get to go out to band practice, and it just uses a different part of my brain, I feel, and it puts the other part to rest. Yeah. So it's
absolutely.
Yeah. And I can imagine tap dancing does that for you too. That's really cool. So as I mentioned before, the book is primarily a telling of your story with your lifelong struggle with weight and body image issues. And you lost a lot of weight, which you talk about in the book. And I want to discuss this particularly in how it goes hand in hand with veganism. When you became vegan, you did not instantly lose a ton of weight like so many people profess has happened to them. And in fact, the vegan diet is often touted as the best diet for weight loss, apparently. So can you talk about the myth that fat vegans don't exist?
Oh, yeah. Well, fat vegans, I mean, that's it. It's totally a myth. And I think that there's a lot to untangle in what you just said, but veganism in and of itself certainly is not a weight loss lifestyle. I mean, it can be, but so can anything else. If you go vegan, you're not going to necessarily lose weight. It depends on so many different factors. For me, when I went vegan, I gained a whole lot of weight, and I had actually just taken a lot of negative and toxic relationships and outlooks that I had previously had about food. And I just sort of created the vegan version of them. So I was addicted to food. I was addicted to processed food. I didn't have any kind of ability to stop eating. I binged. I didn't use food as a way to sustain me, but as a way to escape the pain that I was feeling as someone who was bullied my whole life, both as a kid and as a young adult. It was something that I used as an illusion of control. I mean, so many of us can relate to that. Like, most of us have struggled with food or body image at some point. I grew up in the shadow of a very thin and beautiful mother who didn't know she was thin or beautiful, so was constantly going to Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig and Nutrisystem, and her fat daughter, me, was kind of trailing along behind her playing Tetris and eating Cheez-Its. So by the time I became a vegan, it spoke to the truth of who I was as far as my moral baseline, but it didn't heal me in my heart yet, not at all. And I don't really care if people are. I don't care what size people are by any means. And for me personally, when I lost the weight, it wasn't about being thin or thinner. It was about the fact that I had finally dealt with these lifelong issues of body shaming of myself. And I became healthy. And I started to feed myself in a way that was healthy for my body, but also for my heart, which I had never done before. I didn't know that food could be there as a form of self-care. I thought it was just there as a buffer between stressful experiences, like a stressful morning and a stressful afternoon could be bridged by an entire cake. And so, yeah, there is a lot of fat phobia just in mainstream culture in general, but also specifically in the vegan world. And it's sad and it's unfortunate because as vegans, we profess to care about other people and other beings and to be fair and kind, and yet there is fat shaming everywhere we look. So I had a really weird experience, Allison, in that I saw firsthand when I lost the almost 100 pounds, I saw that the world started treating me very differently. And I kind of was like, what is that about? Like, I realized once I jumped the fence how truly unfair the world had been to me when I was fat. So I'm trying to make sense of that now. And I think the bottom line is to focus on what you just talked about, on self-care, on health. And if you wind up losing weight in that process, which you probably will, if you have weight to lose, then great. And if you feel better about yourself, then great. But it's not about being thin. It's about being kind to yourself, however that means for you. For me, it was about getting healthy and ridding myself of the toxicity of a lifelong battle with body image issues.
So you were saying that fat shaming exists even in the vegan community, which is unfortunately true. We've talked a little bit about this on the show several years ago, but I'd like to go into that a bit now. Like, what can we do about this fat shaming in the vegan community where we're supposed to be kind and compassionate to each other?
I think we start by being kind and compassionate to ourselves. And I think any kind of shaming probably comes from a place of insecurity about ourselves. And also, you know, I wouldn't say all across the board, but for the most part, people who go vegan have some level of questioning assumptions because we've kind of realized that we'd been lied to and we've been betrayed by a food system that was banking on our willful ignorance to consume products that are based around cruelty. So assuming that we are people who can question assumptions, then I would suggest expanding that to encompass our views of ourselves and of those around us. I think that what we can do to battle it is just make sure that we are not feeling any kind of power over others, be it animals. Mm-hmm. If we're not eating animals, then hopefully we're letting go of the power that society has told us we can have over them. But for other people too, if you are approaching someone and you feel like you are better than them because you're thinner or insert the blank, you know, there's so many other ways that society says that we're better than other people, then I would say look in the mirror and let go of that kind of empty, arbitrary notion of self-worth. I think we need to represent all different walks of life, all different shapes and sizes, all different backgrounds and diversities in our movement. And that, you know, that includes people who are bulky, people who are skinny, people who are in between. Focus on health and ethics, not on size and just whatever beauty means to you. To me, beauty is not about size. It's about goodness.
Well said. What keeps you motivated to continue to fight for the animals?
Oh, well, it's the knowledge that you have and that I have and I imagine your listeners have of waking up and realizing that every second, and I don't know the number for Canada, but every second in the United States, approximately 286 land animals are killed for food alone. That doesn't include sea animals, and that doesn't include all of the other animals who are exploited. So as long as that's going on, I'll be motivated. And if I get nervous or if I feel fearful, which I'm trying to let go of fear as a motivating force, but as long as that's going on, then we're needed. We're needed to be their voice. The LGBT movement, which I talked about earlier, has been absolutely reliant on allies in order to move forward. And most social justice movements, all social justice movements in history, have not succeeded in any way, shape, or form without the help of allies. And in the animal rights movement, allies are it. That's all. The animals can't speak up for themselves in this capacity. So we're needed here. That's what keeps me going. And you know what? I have fun. Like, despite what I just said about feeling like I work too much and maybe forget to tap dance every now and then, I really love what I do. It's something I feel really good about. And I've met the most amazing people and I've traveled to incredible places and I've eaten outstanding food. And through our hen house, I've been able to interview, this is something you can relate to, I've been able to interview such amazing, incredible people. So I'm humbled and motivated.
Finally, what are your predictions for the progress of the animal rights movement in the next 5 or 10 years? What do you see happening for the animals?
I think that what's going on now with Hampton Creek Foods will grow, not only with Hampton Creek Foods, but also with other huge companies that are going to provide alternatives to animal products in major products and supermarkets and restaurants, and we'll come up with a way to make those cheaper than the animal-based counterparts, just like they did with Just Mayo, which is, you know, cheaper. I think that the further emergence of in vitro meat is going to be huge. I think it's really our only hope at this point, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see. I think at first people are going to be like, ew, that's disgusting. I would never eat in vitro meat. And then everyone will be like, oh, okay. And I think that what I just said in the last two sentences is going to play out over like a decade. I don't think it's going to happen in like 10 minutes. It's going to be a really long, weird process with some very annoying articles published in the New York Times about it. But ultimately, people are going to start to realize for themselves that it is unethical to consume animal products, and organizations like Mercy for Animals will continue to have undercover investigations that will continue to get on mainstream media, and there will continue to be poised legislation to keep activists quiet, and that will continue to be overturned, and that fight will continue. And at the same time, people will start to have more vegan options available at national chains, and vegan restaurants will pop up left and right. And I think it's exciting. It's going to be frustrating too, because to go into anything not expecting that there will be a struggle is short-sighted, but struggle is a sign of progress.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on the show today, Jasmine, to speak about your story as an animal rights activist. Jasmine's memoir, Always Too Much and Never Enough, comes out on February 2nd. Until then, you can catch her at ourhenhouse.org, and be sure to tune in to the weekly Our Hen House podcast. Thanks, Jasmine.
Thanks, Allison.
That was a fantastic interview, Allison. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us on our next show. This will be more of a free-form show. It'll be lots of fun and full of surprises, so tune in and check that out.
I like surprises.
Yeah, don't we all? We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Our website, animalvoices.org, is where you can stream shows from our archive or download them as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, subscribe via iTunes, and learn about our upcoming events. Stay in touch with us by liking our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and please join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Also, please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either through our Facebook page or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show today with a song by Bette Midler. This is an anthem in honor of Jasmine Singer, our interviewee today, and for the animals. This song is I Shall Be Released. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Not near, so I remember every face of every man who put me here. They say every woman needs protection, then they turn around and tell you every woman's got to fall. I swear I see my own reflection.